You're listening to The Pulse, where it's all about student news, student opinions, and student voices.
What is the current democratic model for the SU?
Yes, because one of the pieces of feedback we got was that people didn't know what was the case now, and there isn't any diagrams anywhere until now showing of what it's like, because it's so confusing. So currently we've got 7 sabbatical officers who are the executive of the union. They make all the decisions, basically.
So that's, for example, education,
yep.
Welfare.
Myself, president, community, postgrad, sport, and activities. So we have a committee that meets every week, and basically we're the highest, like, operational kind of decision-making body. You then got the part-time officers, which represent all the liberation groups, alternative modes of study, that kind of stuff. They have their committee as well, but doesn't meet as often. So I was part-time officer last year, so I'm familiar with doing that as well. So how it fits into the structure is currently we've got Union Council at the top. It's a jury of about 21 people, if everyone turns up, who make decisions on large-scale union stuff. It meets once a term. There's been a couple extra this year because I just like extraordinary meetings and getting issues dealt with. So we've got that. That has DPC, or Democratic Procedures Committee, which is the only body that can edit the bylaws. So at the moment, if Union Council passes a motion saying we want to change something, DPC also have to approve it. And it has happened within the last 12 months that DPC have said no to something council. So there's a tension there. Then you've got Scrutiny Panel, which is makes up those 3 bodies as Union Council. Scrutiny Panel holds the full-time officers to account. It's made up of elected students. The initial scoping report we got questioned the effectiveness of that panel, not because of the members sat on it, but rather because of how it's structured and how it doesn't necessarily actually scrutinise officers on their like political accountability the right way. So that system was implemented about 8 years ago when we did a review. The review was basically only 2/3 done, and then they kind of left it, which is one of the reasons we get so many hiccups at the moment, because it wasn't fully implemented. So we've got that Union Council, like I just described. Sitting under that, you've got the Full-Time Officer Committee. So Union Council can override the Full-Time Officer Committee. Under the Full-Time Officer Committee, we then have the standing committees of Union Council. So Sports Council, Societies Council, the Part-Time Officer Committee, Hall's President's Committee, or Prescom. And there's a number of other there. They can make decisions on their areas and set like something called autonomous policy, which is basically policy that anything can override. So the full-time officers can override those committees, and Union Council can override the full-time officers. Then we have all of these weird other groups that aren't attached to anything. So Sutton Bonington Guild are associated representational bodies. They kind of just float around the edge. They're not tied in to the structure in any way. They don't have any authority over the union. We've got student groups that don't fit into those standing committees. So student-run services, student media, the Welcome Programme, they don't feature as voting members of any of those committees. The Liberation Networks, while the part-time officers have a committee, the scope of that committee is on part-time officer development and their role as officers rather than the networks. And this is one of the tensions that happened last year. So the networks don't have that authority either.
When you're referring to one of the tensions from last year, what specifically are you referring to?
So what I was referring to there was last year, all of the part-time officers on the part-time officer committee decided they wanted to set up a liberation council where all of the networks could come together, share ideas, basically be a standing committee and kind of have that effect. I presented that to Democratic Procedures Committee on behalf of the Part-Time Officers Committee, and Democratic Procedures Committee just said no, and then that was it. So there was no way for those marginalised groups who don't have a voice to get a voice under our current system, which was one of the first things, that sparked, okay, this system is not just unideal, it's actively disempowering those people who are officers and elected to represent people from actually making the change their constituents want. Another example of this structure not working is the case we previously discussed about student group affiliations, where the standing committees weren't well informed enough, not to their own fault, but due to how it's been structured, to make democratic decisions that are legitimate, which meant it had to be escalated up to the trustee level because there isn't an appropriate line of accountability in there because of our current structure being so convoluted. And that was one of the things that made it really clear that while this could appear to just be a democratic thing about representation, but it's also a actual operational legal thing that we need to get right so we can represent our members in a way that they can make the change and be confident that they're making decisions. So there are a couple of things that have come up over the last 12 months about that structure. The bodies floating around the outside are some of the bodies that have been saying we want to make change. So SRS is being like, we need this support. There's no formal structure for that. Sutton Bonington Guild, MedSoc, those kind of bodies. Often there's people running a manifesto saying we'll support these bodies, but these bodies don't have a mechanism themselves to vote. That's, as far as I'm concerned, that's a problem in and of itself. So that's roughly the current structure. There's lots of other random little groups of representatives who don't have any authority, essentially, and aren't tied in. If you look at the notice of referendum, at the bottom of that, there's an image that our environment and social justice officer created for us to try and map out the current system. And just looking at it makes it quite clear how odd it is.
What has been the process of creating the new model, and have you spoken to many students?
So this was commissioned by the previous officer team early on. There was a couple of motions went through Union Council to set different bits of it off. We got in an external consultant who produced a scoping report and spoke to students, staff, officers, loads of key stakeholders to see basically how effective our governance was. Now, she used to work for NUS and was their union and crisis governance and democracy kind of person. So she knew what she was looking at and kind of looked through things. She produced a scoping report that came out just before I took up office. And so I received that and that went to the trustee board, and the trustees were like, oh yeah, this is really bad. Our organization isn't student led. And so we're happy going forward and committing some resource to that. There was a load of recommendations from that board as to what to do. But one of them was to conduct a large scale insight program asking about democratic goods, that kind of thing. It's very easy to do an insight report where you ask students what structure they want first off, but really when that works best at the second stage. And the first stage is what democratic goods or what needs the students have. And that's what we conducted over last term. We had a project group that has overseen this since September, keeping everything to time. We dedicated pretty much the entirety of our insight department's capabilities to doing this, shelved some other projects so we can make sure it was really thorough. That was then taken away by the governance experts, scoped up into some models, which were presented to the full-time officers in early January. We all saw them at the same time. And between then and about 2 weeks ago, there was extensive discussion. We probably went through four or five drafts of the models, decided to advance Model B to consultation, which happened over the course of last week, where it involved a few of us bouncing around the campus, talking to as many different people as we could, getting that feedback, adapting the models to a point where on Friday we decided which model we'd advance to referendum. So yeah, that's a brief overview of the process, but it's been a long process. It's probably one of the most thorough democratic reviews that a students' union's done, and that's only because we're lucky to be very well resourced as a union.
Have you found that you've had high levels of student engagement with the review?
Yes, but maybe not as clear that that's what it is, almost. So the Insight program had over 1,000 students engaged with that, which for the Insight to be representative would have needed 400, so significantly higher than that. So we got a huge amount of feedback there. And over the previous consultation, we had, across all the standing committees, hundreds of students engaging with that. I also did some drop-ins last week for anyone who wanted to come along, chatted with people. As I said, not everyone's currently factored into our democratic procedures, so we can't rely on them to capture everyone. So I went and spoke to like the Guild, the Network, part-time officers, those kind of groups to make sure their insight was fed in as well. So yes, but it may not have been as clear that this is all leading up kind of thing. And the next stage, so this isn't the end of it. So the referendum is essentially a vote to say, yes, continue working on this to implement. Following the referendum, assuming it passes, a huge amount of work will go into meeting with each different type of student group, ensuring that the more operational side of the model is adapted and captures their needs as well as it can. That's the kind of thing that you can only do after you've got the initial thumbs up that, yeah, this is something we'd want to work on. But yeah, so I'd say it's taken quite a lot of students so far, but there's a lot more scope as well for student engagement in the next stage of the process. So the referendum will open 9 a.m. Wednesday the 12th and close at 3 p.m. Wednesday the 19th. So that's all available on the union's website in the notice of referendum, and there should be graphics and stuff appearing on all the screens and social media imminently, if they're not already there.
What does the new proposed democratic model look like that is now being taken to referendum?
So at the current stage, it is worth bearing in mind that this is a top-line principled model. The operational execution of it will be the next phase, assuming people like the top level. One of the key things coming out of the scoping report, and was the things we've been looking through this entire thing, is that the problem with the union at the moment isn't just that its governance is broken. If we fixed our democracy in our current systems and just tied up the holes and pegged people in, then it'd happen, but it's still a top-down hierarchical decision-making structure. What we want and what the new bill is designed to do, in line with the insight findings, is give control of the union and of its decisions and resources to the students that are affected by that. So the insight was really clear that the referenda need to be the top decision-making model for anything that affects everyone or is such a large-scale change that everyone needs to be consulted. So we've got referenda at the top, and one of the things we want to change with how referenda will be done in the new model versus now is, again, this is one of the key things the insight really pulled out from people, is people don't want yes-no choices. Our current structure means you have to. Our bylaws say you need a yes-no question, and that's it. So referenda at the moment, or yes-no. What we want in the new model is something called preferenda, which is a word I hate, but it gets the idea across. You can rank your options. So we could have a series of things, and it'd be like, do you want this, or this, or this, or this? And you can rank them, and they'd be indicative. We'd go in that way and then work that out. So that's one of the things that the new model would bring along with it. After that, the insight was really clear that decisions should be made by the students affected by those decisions. So it shouldn't be up to a referendum what the LGBT plus network spends its money on. Accompanying that means that everyone needs to be tied in. So it shouldn't be up to the full-time officer committee what funding URN gets. It just doesn't make sense. So the new model's designed not on a top-down, not on a bottom-up, but from an outside-in, kind of getting students in collectives to make the decisions that affect their collectives. Now, I'm aware I just said a load of principle kind of things rather than saying what it is. So the highest decision-making body of this new democratic structure are 5 zonal committees, we're calling them. They will be equally decision-making. They're not going to override each other. There's 5 committees that are tasked with making decisions about certain areas of student life, the idea. However, what the structure doesn't do is get these committees to make decisions for the bodies under them. Those bodies under them make those decisions, which then inform the committees. So it's very much going from the outside in. So the 5 zones on the current version of the model are the community zone, which represents students as like civic agents in the society they live in. Education, which represents students as students at the university. Liberation, which represents students living in a society that's got oppressive forces, etc., involved in. Union engagement, which is students as members of the students' union in a kind of engaging with the opportunities we offer, the activities we do, the communities that form within us, kind of thing. And then sustainability, which is students as people living in the world today. What's important on that one is sustainability defined by the United Nations. So that includes social justice issues, that includes welfare issues. We think of environmental sustainability, which is sustainability of the planet, but welfare issues are about sustainability of the person, etc. So social justice is sustainability of society. So it's a broader
term than people might initially think.
Which is one of the things we're aware of will be a challenge in how we market it. It's very easy to see that and think green. Now, that's a really important part of it, but that's not the full scope of that. So yeah, they're the 5 zones, the 5 themes. And each zone will be made up of a set of officers. So this model gets rid of the full-time, part-time officer distinction. It's clear to us that a political representative's political authority shouldn't be based on whether they're employed by the union. It's based on the fact that they're representing their constituents, and they should have an equal voice over those matters. So we've separated those things out. So rather than having 7 full-time officers and 7 part-time officers, we can flex the number in this model, is the idea. There'll be more, some paid, some unpaid. But the needs and representations can be made and adapt to what we need. At the moment, if you want to change our current model, you have to break everything and rebuild it. This new model is designed so it can accommodate those kinds of needs. Each member of one of these committees will have their own zone, subzone, whatever you want to call it. So the LGBT plus officer will have the LGBT plus network, who tell them what to do and tell them how to vote. The representative of each zone is accountable to the zone. So if the LGBT plus network are like, you're not doing what we want you to do, you're not voting on the zone committee how we want you to vote, they can remove them. And that's really important. At the moment, scrutiny panel is a more broad, less owned accountability mechanism and is only in place for the 7 full-time officers. This allows a more malleable, member-led accountability structure. Officers. So in the new model, there are, as I said, we get rid of the distinction of full-time and part-time. So I'm going to talk about sabbatical and non-sabbatical. They're all politically equal. So we'll have 7 sabbatical officers, which will take a year out from their studies, be paid full-time, and they will be 1 per zone. So community, education, liberation, sustainability, and union engagement. There will be an additional sports sabbatical officer because of the amount of resource and importance of that within the union, and an additional union development officer who will be responsible essentially for looking over the entire thing, how the organization as a charity takes on the democratic impetus. As this is a new system, it will require some level of someone looking at the whole picture. They will also chair the trustee board. What's important about that role is it doesn't have a vote. So it's important because it's ensuring our democracy is happening and that governance is happening, etc. But it's not there to politically influence the decisions that that system's making.
You've just said that there'll still be a trustees board then?
Yes, so trustee...
What authority will that have?
So trustee board, we haven't got the option to remove that. That's a legal requirement of the union as a charity. That will have the authority it has now because that's detailed in law. However, the new system allows for effective student leadership, so the trustee board should be relegated to what only the trustee board needs to do, which is look at issues of legal, reputational, and financial intolerable risk. So the really boring stuff that is what the law mandates. So I'd say it would be as minimal as it can be, while still being legally compliant and ensuring we have good governance of the organisation. So, yeah, this model moves power slightly more to the student leaders than in the hands of a few people. And having that chair of the trustee board as an officer who's got no vote in our political structure, but also one of the quirks of that officer is it's accountable to every zone, not just one. So there's higher accountability of that person to ensure that they're enacting the student-led decisions of the organisation.
The union development officer,
yes,
be taking the role, well, not necessarily taking the role, but redeveloping the role of the president role that we have at the moment.
So a lot of the work I do would be in that role, yeah. One of the things that the president is, it's this unnecessary arbitrary figurehead that we don't need. Getting, however, a selection of the work that it does is stuff we do need. So that would, a lot of that I'd move into that. But the problems with the president, so I feel like people should know by now I'm not a fan of having a president, is that it kind of centralizes the idea of expertise. People come to me with things that we have experts on. It diminishes the status of the other officers, whereas this new role doesn't have that. Chairing the trustee board is something that sits with the president at the moment. Last year, when we didn't have a president, it was taken on by Cassie Ulrich, the postgraduate officer at the time, who's currently our education officer. And one of the things she says is that, yes, another officer could do that work, but she had to sacrifice her entire remit as postgraduate officer to do it. So that's why centralising it in that democratic governance-y kind of role seems like an effective solution while maintaining an effective democratic structure in the organisation. So yes and no. A lot of the work I do would be done by that person.
What are the current plans of trying to get the highest level of student engagement possible with the referendum that's coming soon?
So one of the things that has been frustrating about the process so far is because we are really taking the student insight and student consultations seriously and we're adapting the model as they come in, there's probably, 12 different versions of this model floating around. And there haven't, until this morning, there hasn't been one coming from Central Union Comms. That was intentional. We didn't want to be broadcasting, confusing models. Now that that's happened, we have distributed the proposal on Central Comms, and we'll continue to do that. We have a plan for marketing it from now to next Wednesday, saying the referendum's coming, and next week during the referendum saying it's happening. So that will be coming out on all Union Central channels. I personally will be going and talking to a lot of people, making sure they understand it. Some of the people who we've already consulted with will be saying how their influences changed the model and how their feedback's been taken on and what the current proposal is. So an example being Sports Council, who the intent is to meet with again on Monday, but also St. Bonington Guild, etc. So there'll be a lot of personnel on the ground doing it, as well as that kind of social media stuff. Hopefully the student media groups having that kind of reach as well will be really helpful. And during the referendum week, as is standard, there'll be campaign teams either in favour or in opposition of the referendum. I know I'll be shouting for it because I think it gives voices to people who haven't got them at the moment, and that's what we're here for. So there's a detailed comms plan, and what we want is as many people to vote as possible. And because of that, we'll be visiting all the campuses at various times to make sure that conversation's happening everywhere. We're also planning, look at the date sorted out for, again, some kind of drop-ins like I had in the consultation, but more for information this time. So as soon as they're finalised, we'll get that information out as well.
How do you think this may affect the upcoming SU elections?
So this is something that has been discussed probably since the last set of elections, because we knew we wanted to get it over the line before the election so we could be electing the new set of officers, which is the plan. After a lot of discussion, it was decided that was a good idea. Electing people into roles that have just been invalidated almost doesn't seem the right way to do it. What that does mean is that for us to appropriately communicate, that we'll have to be really clear about these are the new roles, this is what you run for, and what the roles actually do. So this is still a problem in our current system. If you'd go around the candidates last year and ask them what the roles do, I doubt people could give you descriptions. What we're working on at the moment is some really detailed descriptions of what these roles are actually for, in a way that people running for them know what they're getting into, know that they feel equipped to make representations on that, and what the expectation of them is from not just the union, but the students who are electing them. Again, another comms plan to try and ensure that that information is cascaded and shared as widely as possible. As soon as the referendum happens, then all the officers will be able to talk about next year's elections. So if the referendum falls, people can offer discussions about what things have been like and how you can run for the same roles. And if it passes, the alternative. So we really will switch full steam from this is the referendum to this is what is upcoming in the elections. Yeah, there are, I believe, 3 weeks of nominations the week following the referendum. So there's ample time for people to have discussions and that, and the elections are early enough that anyone who is making decisions about what they're doing next year will have the appropriate amount of time to take all that into consideration. So hopefully it'll be good and people will be engaged because they're new roles and we've been talking about them a lot and people are really excited to represent what the insight and consultations have showed that they want represented. So the referendum opens 9 a.m. Wednesday the 12th of this month and closes 3 p.m. Wednesday the 19th. So it's open for a week.
When it comes to the day of the referendum, where do students need to go to vote, or is it online?
It's online. There'll be links to that posted everywhere. If you go on the union's website, which I admit is not the easiest of websites to navigate, somewhere there is a button that says current referenda or referendums. It's in there, but we'll be sharing the link directly so everyone can access that. And I'm sure the for or against campaigns will have QR codes and stuff to it and bit links and all that kind of stuff to make sure that's really easy to get to.
This is URN.